Okay, good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, December 18th, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues for our weekly lunch and learn. And this week we are going to be studying Parshat Vayeshev, which you can find on page 198, 198 in your Chumashim. We are going to focus today just on four words, in this week's Parsha to try to get an understanding of what was going on between Yosef and his brothers. Shalom Chana, page 198. So just to context is that Yaakov and Esav have met. And they seem to reconcile. They come back together to bury their father Yitzchak. And now we pick up Yaakov's life on page 198. Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz mugurei aviv be'eretz Kenan. Yaakov settled in the land of his father, sojourning in the land of Kenan. Ele toldot Yaakov. These are the chronicles of Yaakov. Yosef ben Shiva Asrei Shana Hayaroet Tzon Hayaroet et Echav Batzon Vehunar et Bnei Bilhav et Bnei Zilpa Neshei Aviv Veyave Yosef et Ibatam Ra'ah El Avihem. Joseph at the age of 17 years was the shepherd with his brothers by the flock, but he was a youth with the sons of Bilha and the sons of Zilpa, and his father's wives, and Joseph would bring evil reports about them to their father. V'Yisrael ahav et Yosef mikol banav, Israel, this is Yaakov, loved Joseph more than all his sons, ki ben zikunim hu lo, for he was a child of his old age, v'asalo ketonet pasim, and he made for him a fine woolen tunic. Vayiru echav ki oto ahav avihem mikol echav vayisnu oto. This is the pasuk we're going to focus on. Let's look at this pasuk very carefully. The brothers see that it was he whom their father loved most of all his brothers. Vayisnu oto. So they hated him. Vilo yachlu dabro lishalom. And they could not speak to him peaceably. So in this pasuk, what is going on? Well, we know some of what's going on. The brothers notice or realize that Yaakov was favoring or loved Yosef more, and they hated him for it, or they resented him for it. It upset them. Okay, but then it says, "Velo yachlu dabro l'shalom." Okay.
Something else.
What else, Shula?
It says before that it says Vayaveh Yosef Dibatam Ra'ah El Avihem.
Right. He was a tattletale.
So I thought that there is some kind of attention without the ketonet.
Okay, that's true. There is some sort of tension. You're right, without the ketonet. However, the Torah records. It sounds like the Torah's recording. The friction between them is based on the favoritism of Yaakov. I understand you could be right. I think it's perfectly legitimate to say it. And the truth is, it doesn't really matter for our purposes. For our purposes, what matters is there's some friction between the brothers.
Why they said they couldn't speak to him peacefully?
That's what I want to talk about.
What's talking?
What does this mean? V'lo yachlu dabro l'shalom. They couldn't speak. The translation is they couldn't speak to him peaceably, or they didn't speak peaceably to him. So, someone sort of lay out. Give me a storyline. Give me a storyline of what's going on. There, all the brothers are hanging out together. What's happening?
Well, they all resent Joseph. They all resent him.
So, yeah.
So they just can't have a kind word for him because they know.
For him, they can't have a kind word for him.
To him.
To him. They can't have a kind word to him. So what is the nature of their conversation?
Everything is negative.
I mean, jealousy.
Hold on 1 second. One at a time. What's the nature of their conversation?
Well, she says jealousy.
Right. What do you say?
I say, anger because they are angry that his, that their father favors him.
Okay.
I said generally criticizing them for the way of the behavior. They don't get along.
Ah, okay. So here we're already seeing a few different things. What two people are saying that they could not speak to him peacefully. But Shula is saying that he, Yosef, could not speak to them peacefully. Okay?
Well, the problem, really, Rabbi, is that Joseph was so much younger than them.
How do you know?
That's part of the problem. That is part of the problem, yeah. So there is a wide range of discussion as to exactly what's going on here. And I want to look at it, and we'll understand that it's not 100% clear who's having trouble talking to who and what the nature of these troubling conversations are. Okay, the first comment I found so interesting is on, everyone has this sheet in front of them. We're on page one, source number one. This is from Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg. He wrote a commentary on the Torah called Hakitav HaKabbalah. You see his year, 1785, 1865, German rabbi. So what does this mean? Before you read it, lo yachlu, they couldn't. What does that mean, they couldn't?
When you are angry at somebody, you have so much anger, it doesn't probably flow, I guess.
So very interesting.
Anger, that you need maybe
So Chana is saying, "Ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto." They could not physically bring themselves to have a conversation with him. It was physically hard for them to just. Everyone remember the that sitcom Happy Days,
yeah.
Right? With the Fonz.
Right.
What could he never say? Remember that? He could never say, "I'm sorry." And whenever he had to say, "I'm sorry," he would say, "I'm sorry." He physically could not. Google it later. You go to YouTube, Google Fonz trying to say, "I'm sorry." They could not bring themselves to it. That's one interpretation. Lo yachlu. What's another interpretation?
They were so angry with their father, they were taking it out because they couldn't take it out against their father.
It could be.
Out on him.
It's possible. But what does this mean, lo yachlu? They could not speak to him. So one is they physically. What's the other interpretation?
Emotionally, it's or
lo yachlu dabro l'shlam. What does lo yachlu mean?
They couldn't. Yeah.
Okay, what does that mean? Couldn't
bring themselves to have a pleasant talk.
Ah, meaning they didn't. They could have if they wanted to, but they decided not to. There's two different ways to read lo yachlu, right? Lo, well, the if you think about it this way, that's I think that's a much more realistic interpretation. Meaning, think of the people that we've been most angry with. I would find it very hard to find a situation where I physically could not get the words out. I decided, I don't want to talk to you. I'm not going to say anything nice to you. If someone put a gun to my head, I would say, I'd be able to do it. Right? I'd be able to do it. So there's a difference between lo yachlu, they couldn't, and wouldn't. And it's unclear what's going on here. Lo yachlu means, in fact, the various targumim, the various Aramaic translations, do it differently. Some of them say didn't, and some of them say couldn't. Some of them say wouldn't, some of them say couldn't. It's not so clear. Lo yachlu, there are lots of times when we may be in a situation like that, and we just make a decision that we're not going to talk to someone while we, and by the way, I'll give you another example. There are probably lots of times where we feel we don't really want to talk to someone. But you're in company, or you work with the person, and you have no choice but to have a normal conversation. So it's not that you're not able to; you're able to, but in some situations you don't want to. Yeah.
Yeah, but closer to the text, you can look at it. That couldn't say something nice. I mean, couldn't find something pleasant to talk to. So rather than
that's something else. Then it's a question of they couldn't find sort of common ground to talk to. Okay.
Pleasant thing to say.
Okay. All right, let's look at the Haktav HaKabbalah, because he deals with this. Lo yachlu. Yesh nimna min hadavar misibat chisaron hayecholet vakoach. I can't climb the fence. I don't have the strength. I can't climb those steps. I can't run a marathon. I just don't have the physical ability, right? Sometimes we are incapable of doing something. Yesh nimnem in hadibur. In this case, we are unable to speak. Misibat chisaron hayecholet vakoach. I physically can't do it. Kimo v'lo yachol Yosef letapek. Let's talk about another time. Yosef, when he finally meets his brothers, it says he could not hold himself back anymore. So there his emotions overtook him, and he burst out in tears. So that is sometimes yachol is about our physical ability, right? V'lo yachlu echav la'anot oto. And sometimes I think what he's saying is the brothers could not talk, meaning they were tongue-tied. They were like, well, I can't believe this is Yosef. They physically could not put a sentence together. Their brain was so messed up and so confused at that moment that they couldn't physically say any words. That could be what's going on here. They're so angry. They're so jealous. They're so resentful. They just could not. Their mind could not string together a sentence. Yesh nimna misibat hamusar v'hamitzvah. On the other hand, sometimes we refrain from doing something because of musar and mitzvah here, I think he means because of, we don't think it's the right thing to do. Right? I have the capacity to steal something, but lo yachol, I can't. It's not right. It's not appropriate. I have the capacity to say something mean to somebody, but lo yachol, because the musar and the mitzvah, the proper behavior and my requirements to my values and my religious values tell me I can't do it. Very right, very different things. Velo yochlun hamitzrim leechol et ha'ivrim, velo yachlu lasot et ha'pesach. He gives some other examples where lo yachlu means from a religious or an ethical perspective. V'kan yesh lefarsho be'echad mishnei panim ha'elu. So the Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg is wondering. He's saying here we have to translate lo yachlu dabro l'shalom in one of these two ways. Was it that they were so emotionally disturbed by this whole situation that they couldn't string together a nice sentence to say to Yosef? Or they decided, because they didn't feel right, because of what you're saying, Shula, because of his being a tattletale, maybe it is connected, because of him telling on them, and because of the family situation, they felt it's not appropriate for us to talk to him. He's acting, he's immature, he's not appropriate, doesn't deserve us. Im misibat miniyata yecholet, shemigodel sinatam oto, hayalehem bilti efshari ledaber mo dibrei shalom. Because of their hatred, they could not speak to him. Im misibat hamusar v'hamitzvah, or because of some ethical commitment, Shalohayu rotsim lihiyot min hakat hadovrim bifihem shalom imreihem barabil vavam. This is interesting. What's the religious commitment? They didn't like him, but if they spoke nicely to him, that would have been dishonest. It would have been speaking echad bilev bechad bepeh, not being the same, not speaking the way we feel. So instead of saying something nice to him, even though they didn't like him, they made a decision because of musar and mitzvah, because of trying to be consistent between what they say and how they feel, they decided not to talk to him. Now, the Kitav HaKabbalah does not tell us which one it is, but it's interesting to use his model to think about what was stopping them from talking to him, right? Was it because they were, again, so angry that they couldn't do it? They physically could not utter the words, or they could have if they wanted to, but they decided not to because it was not keeping within their ethical commitments to be echad b'peh v'echad b'lev, one thing in the heart and a different thing from the mouth. So it's interesting just to consider these two perspectives. Okay, now let's delve a little deeper into this and look at what Rashi says. Okay? Rashi is the second commentary here. Rashi is the second commentary here. And I want to look at Rashi's second comment. This is source number two. You know, see where it says, Dibro, to speak to him. Lidaber imo. It's right over here. The second comment of Rashi. Source number two. But the second source number two, but the second section. What does it mean? Velo yachlu dabro. It means lidaberimo. The brothers simply could not speak to him. That's pshat. The brother again. Whether it's they decided not to or they couldn't, they simply could not speak peacefully to him at all. Period. Lo yachlu dibro l'shalom. Okay? Plain and simple. However, there are two other commentaries that actually see this differently. One makes the case based on the grammar, and one makes the case perhaps based on context. But they make the similar, they're making a similar point. That is on source number 3 and 4. One is Shmuel David Luzzatto, an Italian commentary. You see his ears. Velo yachlu dabro l'shalom. Hamifarshim pershu lo yachlu l'daberi mo l'shalom. Here he's quoting Rashi. The commentary said that they were unable to speak to him peacefully. Ach lo matsanu bishum makom dibro bimakom diber imo. We don't find anywhere else in Scripture, says Shmuel David Luzzatto, that the word dibro is the shortened version of diber imo. Right? Most of the commentaries say, what does this mean? Lo yachlu dibro l'shalom. You would translate into Hebrew, lo yachlu L'daber imo l'shalom. That's how Rashi says it. L'daber imo. That's exactly what Rashi says. L'daber imo. Says Shmuel David Luzzatto, the problem is we don't have anywhere else in the Torah where the word dabro is considered to be a shortened version of, thank you, a contraction of the word, of the words l'daber imo. So it doesn't mean that. It can't mean that, he says, because we have nowhere else where it says that. So therefore, v'li nira, says Shadal, Shmuel David Luzzatto, v'lo yachlu, se'et dibro l'shalom. They could not handle his speaking to them peacefully. It's not that they couldn't speak to him peacefully, but when he tried to speak to them peacefully, maybe to apologize for being a tattletale, or trying to say, don't worry that dad gave me the coat, we're all equal, they would hear nothing of it. K'shehaya midaber imahem afilu divrei shalom, lo hayu yicholim seito. They could not, right, they, in any case, the blame is on them. Either they couldn't speak to him peacefully, or when he tried to speak to them peacefully, it fell on deaf ears. He tried to apologize, he tried to explain his way out of it, whatever, he tried to fix the situation, they would not hear of it. And again, Rav Shmuel David Luzzatto makes this claim based on a grammatic, not grammar, but biblical usage, I would say. That this word never means l'daber imo anywhere else. And Rav Hirsch fleshes it out, and you see that Rav Hirsch and Shadal are contemporaries. Lo yachlu. Heim lo yachlu l'daber ito l'shalom. What does that mean? Hayinu b'derech hamiviyat l'day shalom. He was trying to do something that was going to bring peace between them. Ube'ofen acher. Heim, this is the key, I'm sorry, this is the one. Heim lo yachlu l'se'et et diburo hayididuti itam. They couldn't tolerate his friendly approach to them. Now Hirsch makes a beautiful, insightful psychological comment. B'makom sheyesh yedidut hakol mitnahel kishura. When there is affection, everything is straightforward. When two people get along and one person says something nice to the other person, you take it at face value. They do like my tie. They do like my dress. They do like the meal I made. Right? And what do you say?
Thank you.
Right? Ach, kisheyichasim mituchim. But when there's tension, when relationships are tense, makpidim halakol, then we are sensitive to everything that someone says. I'm not sure.
Suspicious.
Right? Did that person say they like my tie because they really like my tie? Are they being sarcastic? Or are they just telling me that to be nice? They have nothing else to say to me, right?
Who cares about this mind?
Especially when the second person comes to speak in an amicable way, you there's just mistrust. You don't trust them. We've been fighting all this time, and now all of a sudden they're coming and trying to make peace with me. Forget about it, right? So lo yachlu dibro l'shalom, they couldn't speak to him when he came peacefully to them. They were not able to handle his peaceful overture. So according to Rashi, they just couldn't speak to him peacefully. But according to the Shmuel Dav Lutatu and Rav Samson Rafael Hirsch, it's a little bit different. It's Yosef was trying to make peace. Or even if he wasn't trying to make peace, in the times when they weren't arguing, and he would say, hey guys, you want to go herd the sheep together? They would automatically be suspicious. What is he trying to do? He got the coat. He's a tattletale, meaning no matter now. So the upshot of this is, first of all, Yosef got himself into this mess, right? Because since he started being a tattletale, once he showed what he was capable of, the brothers just didn't trust him anymore, and no matter what he said, wasn't going to make a difference.
Do you think it was a precursor to what they think they were going to do? And they
I mean, this whole thing is a precursor. He gets sold very soon after this. Maybe something's germinating in their mind. Could be. Yeah. Because he's the favorite.
He's a person that he has a
government. No, not at this point. No. Not yet. At this point, he's just a brother. He's just a brother. But I do think you. This. No. No. But I think you're still right. No, I think you're still right. I think you're still right because what's going on here is that. I wouldn't say it this way, but I think you make a good point because you could make the argument that of course Yosef is trying to be nice to them. He knows he's the favorite, because he got the coat, so he could say it's all going to be okay. Meaning, if he would put himself in their shoes, maybe he would also feel upset. But since he's the one who's the favorite and he got the coat, right? Maybe therefore, since he has that favored position, the brothers say, well, of course now he wants to make peace with us. It's easy for him, but the rest of us schleppers that Abba doesn't like as much, we don't trust him anymore, right?
It's very interesting because sometimes the little ones in the family, they are running the show.
Right. Okay, so let's look at a couple of other comments, a couple of other ways to approach this, okay? We see on page number 2, source number 5, from Rav David Kimchi, you see his years, 1160 to 1235. Velo yachlu dabro l'shalom, lidaber imo b'divrei shalom, ela b'divrei miriva. Any conversation with Yosef did not revolve around peacefully discussed matters of common interest, there's a little editorializing here, but concerned only matters of dispute between them. Meaning, they couldn't find anything to talk about, even small talk. Right, they couldn't say, how about those Mets? Right, how about those Astros? There was not even a small talk between them. Everything turned to miriva. Everything became a fight. Meaning, usually, even if you have two enemies, they could fake it. Right? You can make small talk. You're forced to be in the, sitting next to each other on the airplane or in the same room. All right, you can figure out some way to avoid having an outright fight, but not them. Everything became, they were only able to talk about their disputes, about the problems that we had together. And finally, we'd have to go. It's unclear. It's unclear exactly the difference in the ages, because we don't know exactly how much time was between each of them being born. But Yosef was the youngest, the second youngest.
The mother was his favorite. The mother was the father's favorite.
Yes, you're right. Okay, let's look at Sephorno, number six, the last comment. V'lo yachlu davro l'shalom. Even though the brothers had to speak to Joseph pertaining to their business dealings, both concerning household problems and problems with the herds and flock, something imposed upon them by their father's command to see in him their manager, they did not speak to him concerning any private matters, brotherly concerns. So this is a little bit different. According to the Radak, they didn't talk about anything. They couldn't even talk about the business together. Everything became a matter of contention. According to Sephorno, they only talked about business. But whenever one brother wanted to confide in another brother, or whenever one brother was having personal problems, they never went to Yosef. Right? They never spoke to Yosef about it. Yosef was the outcast. All the other brothers would share their personal problems with each other, whatever private matters they wanted to discuss, but Yosef was left out. I mean, l'shalom in this case means things regarding, maybe you would say shalom bayit, or just general matters of life they would not speak to Yosef about. Okay? So no matter how you slice it, the relationship was strained. Just to review, according to Rashi, the brothers couldn't speak to him. And that's the same thing, it sounds like they didn't speak to him, and that's the same thing that the Radak says and the Sephorno says. This school of thought is lo yachlu dabro l'shalom, means they could not bring themselves to speak peacefully with him. Unclear, based on Rav Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, whether they just couldn't do it because they were so angry that they couldn't emotionally string together anything nice to say, or they wouldn't do it because they knew if they would make small talk with him and make it look like they liked him, that would be dishonest. And they would be echad b'lev ve'echad b'peh, one thing in their heart and something else in their mouth, and that they weren't willing to do. That's one school of thought. The second school of thought, and that is the opinion of Shmuel David Lutzato and Rav Samson Rafael Hirsch, is that it's not that they couldn't speak to him peacefully, it's that the relationship was so far gone, had soured so much, that they simply were not open to hearing even peaceful overtures from Yosef. Even when he tried to fix his errors and move away, let's say, from telling on them to the father, and just trying to have a normal relationship with the brothers couldn't bring themselves to do it. They were too far gone. There was too much suspicion. No matter what he said was going to be viewed with suspicion. Those are the two school of thoughts of how to understand the word dabro. Before I take your question, we have one. Let me take a question, then we have one more thing to do. Yeah.
Maybe you discussed it. I just wanted to know if they gave examples of how.
It doesn't say. All it says is in verse. In verse number two, at the end, on page 198, verse number two, Vayave Yosef et dibatam ra'a el avihem, Joseph would bring evil reports about them to their father, but doesn't say what.
We don't know what.
We do not know what. Okay. So now one other question.
Okay, but it says something else.
Yeah.
Israel ahav et Yosef mikol
banav. Right. He is, right, which definitely contributed to this problem. Okay, now let's just look at this idea that Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg mentions. We're going to see in a minute that he's not the first one to mention it. This was in source number one. Again, what was the reason why, according to the view, that they would not, meaning if they wanted to, they could have, but they decided they were not going to speak to Yosef in a peaceful fashion. Why not? Why they decide not to?
Because of what he said, that they don't want to have a chad b'peh, a chad
right, because they don't want to be, they want to be honest. They want to be ethically honest. Right, right. So,
I don't believe that because if they were ethically proud, they wouldn't do what they were going to do. I don't think they were so
that's a good point. That's a fair point. But at least at this point, Rashi is suggesting something positive. Let's look at it. Go back to source number two, the first Rashi that we skipped. V'lo yachlu dabro l'shalom, mitoch ginutam lamadnu shivcham. From what is stated to their discredit, we may infer something to their credit. Shelo dibro echad bepeh ve'echad belev. That they did not say one thing with their mouth and having a different thought in their heart. So this actually relates to what we did with Lavan. Remember a few weeks ago we talked about Lavan and we said that because of what happened at the end with Lavan, some commentaries twist the beginning of the story of Lavan and say that he must have been a terrible guy at the beginning. So we have to be careful about doing this with the brothers too. It's true that the brothers later in the story act inappropriately and treat Yosef poorly and take action that actually lead to him being sold as a slave. But it doesn't mean that here, right? We have to look at them a little bit, maybe give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt at this point. But even if not, Rashi's point is interesting. Meaning, from this terrible story, right, there is a little bit of a silver lining that we can get, right? I mean, the brothers were not hypocrites. They did not act politely to Yosef face to face, right? Hold on one second. In this case, Rashi is saying they were not hypocrites, right? They did not act politely to him to his face and then malign him from behind their back. I'm sure we've all been in those situations, right? Where we've heard someone said something behind our back and you're like, I can't believe it because I was just with them and they said such nice things about me. Well, that's called being echad bepeh ve'echad belev, being one thing in your mouth, saying and acting in one way, speaking and acting in one way, believing in another way. They were consistent and they were upfront, meaning they basically let Yosef know that you're out, we're done with you, right? And we're not gonna sugarcoat it, and we're not gonna give you this facade of friendliness. It's true that this interpretation for this behavior there's no judgment, and for this behavior it just seems to all the brothers were involved. It sounds like there was consensus as opposed to what you're saying like earlier with Shimon and Levi, but it seems like here there's consensus that Yosef was to be shunned. And they, according to Rashi, they decided. Lo yachlu doesn't mean they couldn't. It means they wouldn't, because they whether or not they went through this deep thought in their mind, they're ultimately what it results in is that they are being consistent and not violating of being echad belev ve'echad bepeh. I think this raises an interesting question for us to think about. One is that always right? Meaning, is it always right there's one explicit example in the Talmud. Let's see if you know this. There's one explicit example in the Talmud where the rabbis seem to condone saying one thing but thinking another. What is it?
A bride.
The rabbis say, what are you supposed to say to a bride? Kala na'e v'chasuda. Where does that song come from? Ketzad meraktim lifnei hakala. Where does it come from? It comes from the Talmud. What are you supposed to say and sing in front of the bride? The rabbis say, no matter what you think, you're supposed to say the bride is beautiful. Kala na'e v'chasuda. So on the one hand, Right? Now, as funny as it may sound, it's very important. Right? Shh. It's very important. Right? It's very important to consider this question. Right? Is that always the case? Is it always right to be like, maybe had Yosef's brothers faked it, maybe it would have ultimately led to a more peaceful relationship, and it wouldn't have led to the terrible treatment that went. You never know. You're right. You never know. So this is actually a midrash that Rashi's quoting, I believe. Even though the rabbis in the midrash here praise the brothers for being consistent, elsewhere the rabbis say, well, maybe not. This does not mean they were miserable to him. This means that they're saying they talked to him about business. They talked about what was going on with the family and with the sheep, but they didn't include him in their private conversations because for the reasons we said. Again, is there another way to look at it? Yeah, I think there is another way to look at it, and we have to. On the other hand, we can't be cavalier about it, right? We can't be so quick to say, yeah, I'm gonna make that person believe I really love them, but behind their back. And again, there's also no indication that the brothers, well, that's a stretch, but we should not, behind someone's back, speak badly about them, right? So there's a lot that's brought up. And I think also in common public discourse, right? Today, public discourse is very, very frayed, right? Because politically, America and communities are very frayed. And are often on the extremes, and so the question is, what's the proper way to have a conversation? And this is all tied into that about what's the proper way to have a conversation. Do you not have any conversation at all? What happens if someone comes and tries to be conciliatory? Are we supposed to be constantly and forever suspicious of a person like Yaakov, like the brothers were? I think this brings up a lot of things for us to talk about in terms of how we interact with each other. Yeah.
That is really the one thing that is very consistent in all our parashot that we went through.
Yeah.
Yaakov wasn't even kind of heaven. You have the example of heaven.
Right. There's a lot of strife.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then you have Abraham that threw away Hagar.
You're right.
They're not nice, basically. That's the not nice part of a human being.
Correct.
But our sages are trying to cover it up and say there is a reason behind it. Whether it's Musa, whether it's
I would say that you are right that much of Sefer Bereshit involves people being chosen and people being rejected. Right? For sure. At the end of Bereshit, though, however, what do we see? Finally, there's no rejection anymore. All of the brothers are considered, and they all become part of Bnei Yisrael. And sort of that's sort of the way it starts, like you said, with Cain and Hevel. It starts with violence, it starts with rejection, and there's a lot of that, a lot of family strife. But finally, between husband and wife, between fathers and sons, between brothers and brothers, a lot of family strife in Bereshit, right? But finally, at the end of Sefer Bereshit, there's a reconciliation between all the brothers. I'll get you in one second, Leora. I would argue that I would say the opposite. I don't see that Chazal hide it and whitewash it. Right? First of all, certainly the Torah doesn't. It's all out there. All of these difficult interactions, they're all out there for everyone to see. And second of all, when Chazal say you have to look at the midrash. Mitoch ginutam lamanu shivcham. We are agreeing that this is bad behavior, but it's not all bad. There is something positive about this, which is that at least they were not cutthroat, right? At least they were they were somewhat, they were not hypocrites. But the rabbis in the Midrash call this behavior gnut.
But
this is bad behavior. Why? He wasn't a hypocrite. That's not a hypocrite. He was, whatever it was, he was immature. He also, there's plenty of blame to go around in the story. Okay, Liora, you get the last word.
Showing what deep-seated jealousy does. And it's to talk about the surface grit of being conciliatory or being nice. I think that's surface. Whichever way you do, you're going to be nice, you're not going to be nice. It's the problem is the deep-seated jealousy. And whatever you do on the surface ain't going to change it. And it really is very potent. And I mean, I think I look at us as Jews as well, how we've been treated because maybe there was jealousy as well.
I think there's definitely jealousy here, but I, on the other hand, it is possible for someone not to be shallow.
I don't know.
Right? Otherwise, Leora, you're suggesting that human relationships can never be mended.
Well, maybe you need to look at it in a bit of a different way.
Right. So there has to be some. Right. Yeah. We have to believe
about the jealousy that's lying beneath it. It's not just nice. Oh, I'm going to be nice, even if I'm jealous.
No, but you're right. If it's just shallow, it's shallow. But we have to believe that I believe that human beings can get over jealousy and can get over those bad feelings and speak in a way which is not on the surface. Yeah. All right. Thank you, everyone.